We're going to start the meeting. How many do we have here? One, two. So we do have a quorum, and I want to remind people that if we go past 5 o'clock, the speaker will come in here and turn the sound off. So let's try to keep our comments to the bills and pretty brief, and I think we can get through these four bills in the hour that we have. So the first bill is House File 3901 by Representative Fritz, and I had a couple of announcements, however, before that. One is the supplemental budget bill we're doing is essentially just a budget bill with no policy in it. So they're all going to, my understanding is that bill will be combined with the other finance bills, and that we'll end up with one bill that just does finance and no policy. Second is, this happened to come in email to me today from the Mayo Clinic that relates to healthcare reform, and practically everything in this statement from the Mayo Clinic is things that we have looked at and are currently in the reform bill. So, Representative Fritz.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. Good afternoon, and thank you for this opportunity to present this legislation that is important to Steele County. The bill we're hearing today is House File 3091, and it is the second of two bills, which permits Steele County to proceed with its Community for a Lifetime initiative, which is a comprehensive countywide assessment of their aging care coordination system. I do have a delete all amendment, however, Mr. Chair, that I'd like to put on first, and then I have a couple oral amendments as
well. Okay. Representative Fritz moves House File 3901 for be recommended to pass, sent to the Finance Committee, and she also moves the DE1 amendment. If we delete all, so it gets the bill the way she wants it, so I don't think we need any discussion on that. So all those in favor of the DE1 amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? So Representative Fritz.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And to the amendment then, the DE1 amendment, I do have a couple of amendments to that. On page 2, line 30, delete annual and insert monthly.
So that would be on line 2.3, strike annual and insert monthly.
Correct. And line 31, after individuals in Steele County, insert multiplied by 12. And last, line 33, after by an amount equal to, insert relocated.
Okay. So the amendments are on line 2.3, strike annual, insert monthly. On line 2.31, after county but before the semicolon, insert multiplied by 12, and on line 2.33, after the word 2, insert relocated. But I'm not sure that one makes sense.
Okay. The word "the."
Oh, is it? Okay. Does that go after the "the"? Okay, it would go after the, and so it would say an equal amount to the relocated nursing facilities.
Correct. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
And I will assume that those don't have any fiscal notes for changes, because there is no fiscal note in this bill right now, and we'd sure like to keep it that way.
And that's correct, Mr. Chairman. Now that the bill is in the shape that I'd like it, I would like to invite...
Representative Fritz incorporates those. Okay, I've been told that's not correct. We have to vote on those amendments, so I would move that we adopt those three oral amendments. Any discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? So we now have the bill the way the author wants it.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And now I would like to invite Commissioner Tom Shea from Steele County to further explain this initiative, and we have two other folks too, and we'll be brief.
Okay. Commissioner, welcome to the committee. State your name for the tape, and welcome back to the legislature.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, committee members. Tom Shea, Steele County Commissioner from Owatonna, Minnesota. And thank you very much for taking the time, and thank you to Representative Fritz and Representative Ruth for sponsoring this legislation on Steele County's behalf. Steele County is one of seven counties in the state that owns and operates a nursing home facility. And we're very proud of the fact that we've been profitable over the years, meaning that we haven't had any direct property tax subsidies to operate this facility for over 20 years. We've been doing that. We've been virtually 100% filled, and we do have a waiting list. But we also understand that given the current environment with long-term care, that we're not sustainable. It's not sustainable to keep this operational and profitable and provide the care that our citizens expect. So recognizing that, we have undertaken an initiative to try to avoid dealing with this crisis that's down the road. And we've developed a comprehensive continuum of care program in Steele County utilizing all our elderly services that we have. They've been summarized, our first step in this Communities for a Lifetime initiative report that I believe is part of your packet. The cornerstone of our initiative at this point is to downsize our existing nursing home from 108 beds to 80 beds and to build a brand new facility on the new healthcare campus in Owatonna, Minnesota, which has the Mayo Health System for the doctors, Alina provides a hospital, and then the third new building on that campus will be our nursing home. To facilitate that, we're proposing that we partner with the Benedictine Health Systems to operate our facility, our new facility, as well as our existing assisted living and congregate living facility, and that we accomplish this by creating a new community nonprofit organization to own and operate these joint facilities. And that's the purpose of the legislation. And I'll be standing for questions. I'd also like to introduce our Human Service Director, Kelly Harder, who can talk a little bit more about our Continuum of Care initiative.
Welcome back. Mr. Harder was here a week ago or 2 weeks ago.
And Mr. Chair, thank you, and committee members. It was 11:30 at night, however, I remember, but it was an enjoyable time nonetheless. I want to refer all of you to the handout you just received, and it is part of the packet. And ladies and gentlemen, the key here is that this isn't just about the nursing home bed, but we have taken in our county to over 26 town hall meetings with the residents by Steele County, have told us, number one, what our assets are. This is about addressing long-term care in nursing homes in a non-traditional way, which isn't just about cost of living increases and that struggle, but it's about, let's look at our whole continuum. And if you look at this chart, what this whole initiative is about is it's about moving the cost of these dollars. And I will add one thing. We've costed out this continuum of service delivery of publicly funded dollars all the way from early intervention, in-home transportation, meals on wheels, all the way into the hospital. The $38 million on that primary medical end of life, if you would, on the one end of the continuum, it's actually short of, I would project, about $20 million because I didn't get the numbers yet out of the Mayo Health System. That's not an easy thing to get right away. So I would say that, in fact, it's more of about $67 million approximate cost. how do we move those dollars from that end of the continuum toward the earlier intervention? And we do it by creating this nursing home opportunity, which then creates an opportunity for us with our contract through the assisted living beds to start taking higher level care. And it pushes it back down to how we keep people in their homes longer, how we provide better transportation, how we deal with the affordable, sustainable housing. And we're able to do this because our community's engaged and has told us how we can build on our assets and not just focus on what we don't have. And this is part of the whole continuum. So the risk is it's just about a nursing home bed and a cost. No, this is about our ability to work with our whole continuum. And that's what this captures. And finally, I would also say for the first time, to address this issue, we have the provider, the insurer, the consumer, and the county sitting at the table to address this long-term nursing home situation. Thank you.
Good afternoon. My name is Kevin Rymanowski. I'm with the Benedictine Health System, and I get the wonderful task of explaining the numbers. I'm going through the numbers, and I'm not sure if everyone has the packet that was included, but basically our approach to the approach was converting the existing 108 bed facility down to 80 beds, and try to do that in a cost neutral approach. We've had discussions with the Department of Human Services over the last few days, and we're continuing to work with them in order to do that. But the simple approach that we took was taking of the 28 beds that are being downsized, using the historical percentage of how many of those people in the facility are covered by medical assistance. We have about 15 residents that would no longer be in the nursing home covered under medical assistance. The annual cost of someone being in, or the average annual cost of someone being in the nursing home in Steele County, in the Cedar View nursing home, is $56,082. The cost of that individual or individuals being in the community utilizing elderly waivers is about $22,585. So there's a significant savings. We're trying to capture that savings, which applied to the 15 residents or so is about $503,000. And take that savings and correlate that to an increase in the reimbursement to the nursing home, because building the new facility is going to cost some money to put that into it. And so the approach we've taken is taking those savings, apply that to the medical or the anticipated Medicaid residents in the new facility, and spread that out, resulting in approximately $36 rate increase. And so that's basically what we've done here. We're trying to make sure that everything's cost neutral. As I said, we're still working with the state. I don't think they, as far as I know, they have not come up with a fiscal note for this bill yet. But we're continuing to work with them to make sure that it does come in at zero.
We have heard that it is budget neutral. So.
Okay.
Any questions? Representative Pepin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm not sure if this perhaps is a question for Commissioner Shea or perhaps Representative Fritz. I'm just curious, Representative Fritz, you don't represent Steele County, so I'm wondering why you're carrying the bill. Is Representative Ruth not supportive of the bill? Or
Representative Ruth and I both are supportive of the bill.
And she just decided not to offer the bill? Or?
Well, I do represent parts of Steele County.
Okay.
I represent Wright and Steele County.
Okay.
Are both in my district.
Wasn't there a question last year about this new facility being in a different county? I think it's on the edge of Owatonna, or am I not reading?
No, not this one.
Okay. That must have been another issue. Any other questions? Representative Fritz renews her motion that 3901 be, as amended, be recommended to pass and sent to the Finance Committee. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Thank you for your time.
For
I appreciate it.
Thank you very much. And Representative Fritz, you have another bill.
Yes, I do. Grab that. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. This is the working group study, Emergency Mental Health Service Working Group, that we believe I'd like to move and include in the omnibus bill, House Bill 3147.
We're recommending that this be just passed as a separate bill.
It's a separate bill?
Yes.
Okay. That's done. All right. Thank you, Representative. And I will turn it over to my testifier and introduce herself.
Mr. Chairman, members, my name is Sue Aberholden, Executive Director of NAMI Minnesota, National Alliance on Mental Illness. You might remember that last year and the year before, you appropriated some funding for crisis services, crisis mental health services for the state of Minnesota. So they're at the beginning stages. We think it's really important that people be able to find those numbers instead of calling 911 and the police, because having a criminal justice response means people end up in jail. Having a mental health response means people end up in the care that they need. I printed off all the crisis numbers for the state of Minnesota. As you can see, it's many pages. Very fine, tiny print. Freeborn County alone has like four numbers. So you're in a mental health crisis with your family member. Are you going to figure out who to call? No, it's going to be really difficult. So before we go down this long road of, you know, we're just putting the money out, people are developing their, you know, promotional material so people know about their crisis numbers, why not take a quick step back and say, is there a way that we can actually create one number, 811, something like that, so that when you have a mental health crisis, you know what phone number to call. You don't have to worry if it's about child or adult. Someone else does the triage. You don't have to worry about what county you're in. Again, we can do that. We have broad support, the EMS working group that met during the summer. That was actually one of their recommendations, that we try to create one phone number. The Ambulance Association is here. They're strongly in support of it as well. This time to do this is now, not 2 years from now when everyone has all their phone numbers and materials printed up. And I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Are there any questions for Ms. Aberholden? Representative Abler.
Just a short comment, actually. It's a great idea. Does the money come from out of the operations budget where they can...
This is budget
neutral.
This is
operations, yeah.
And the department...
They have millions of dollars there.
The Human Services said they will eat the cost, so they, that sort of implies they like this bill.
Very good.
Thank you.
Aye. Any other questions? Seeing none, Representative Fritz renews her motion that House File 3147 be recommended to pass and return to the Finance Committee. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? So the bill is passed.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. Thank you very much for your time.
And thank you for the brevity of your presentation. Let's see. Okay, next is Representative Thiessen with House File. Yeah, sure. With House File 3955.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd move House File 3955 be recommended pass and be referred to Finance. Is that right?
Yes.
Okay. And if I could do, I'd like to, first of all, move that we delete sections 1 and 2 of the bill because they carry a fiscal impact.
So, Representative Thiessen moves to delete sections 1 and section 2. Any discussion of that? Seeing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? So we have now deleted sections 1 and section 2.
And I'd also like to move the A3 amendment, if I could.
You just did it? Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Oh, Representative Bunn.
Can I speak briefly? I know we already took it out. I just want to say that went by so fast, I was paying some sufficient attention. This portion that we just removed was an attempt to ensure that people with physical disabilities who are under four of our waiver programs would be able to use waiver funds to fund physical exercise and physical activities, as was once true in the past. We were trying to reinstate that. We thought it could be done in a budget-neutral way. It turns out it does contain a fiscal note, and it didn't quite get worked out to resolve that, and so we understand why you're removing it, have removed it at this time,
but wanted to just say that we hope it's something we continue to work on to reestablish this, because in the long term it would be a lower cost to keep people physically active to lessen medical care costs.
And Mr. Chair, I don't disagree with Representative Bunn, and this passed the policy committee, and so if we can do it in a way that's cost neutral, I'm happy to take it on the floor.
Thank you.
And then, so the A3 amendment, if I could.
Representative Thiessen moves the A3 amendment. Do you want to
say that? Yeah, Mr. Chair, this is it's basically replacing language in the bill. If you recall in the bill, basically what this bill is trying to do is combine some income streams to do some community consortium planning, kind of what we heard Steele County doing. That would be a model of what could be done with this. And it pulls a percentage of different income streams that we have now. This just does it in a way that's more, that the department likes better than the way it was written in the original bill. It's doing the same thing in substance, but it's just easier for the department to administer it this way.
Any, and we assume that's cost neutral?
Yes.
Any discussion? Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Thiessen, in your Amendment A3, it says the Commissioner of Health shall reserve 10% of funds appropriate for the biennium for the nursing home moratorium. They're okay with that?
Yes, as I understand sure. That this has been worked out with, and that's what the original language was as well. This just does it in a different. It does it in a different way.
Well, the original language, Mr. Chair, Representative, said the Department of Commissioner of Finance was going to. So I'm just wondering what
the Commissioner, Mr. Chair, the Commissioner of Finance is just going to set up an account. This just doesn't set up an extra account to do that. It just lets them use the dollars directly from the Department of. It saves a step, basically.
Okay. Thank you.
And this is worked out with the department.
Any further discussion of the A3 amendment, Representative Rood?
Well, Mr. Chair, just
Representative Abler.
So this is a one-time pot of money to do this startup. Is that what, starting in 2009 and through 2011? Is that the idea?
Mr. Chair, Representative, 3 years. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Then it's done.
It's the right thing.
Thank you.
Gotcha. And Representative Loeffler.
Mr. Chair and Representative Thiessen, I was just trying to understand kind of how the pieces, the financing fits within what it currently is. Do they continue to retain the priority for other grants that was in the bill itself? Because I was looking at the community service grants, which is also a deletion, and we have a lot of counties that are right now under penalty because they can't get everyone out of nursing homes who are under 65, and they're actually using these to develop service capacity. Is there anything in the criteria by which you'd be selected for a consortium that would give preference to a community that right now is paying penalties to the state because they haven't been able to develop that kind of community mix of services? Or what's the criteria? Because I think these are the funds that we made available for those purposes, and so I'm just wondering if those communities are somehow advantaged in the selection process.
Representative,
Mr. Chair, I don't believe that would be the case unless they formed a consortium, and that was one of the pieces of the proposal that they emphasized. But it's taking 10% of those dollars to use for these grants
and the other grants.
Well, that's just a priority. Yes, that would just. Which grant are you pointing to?
Mr. Chair, Representative, I'm looking at line 3.9, the priority for other grants, technology related grants, housing finance agency funds. That's the transportation options, and so that's where I was concerned that we're giving these potential consortiums, you know, first dibs at all the pools that are available to respond to identified service gaps, and whether or not we had language that actually said if there's an application from a community that has that issue, that they would get priority over, you know, all the other 40 consortiums that might apply, that kind of a concept.
Right, there's not in the language, except if they were to, as part of their proposal, say this is a big issue for us, and you will note that the one of the pieces of the analysis is that it is building upon current planning practices developed by County Gaps Analysis and the Elder Care Development Partnership. So to the extent that that gap analysis was done by a county, and this is one of the things they identified, to that extent, the consortium, that consortium would have to be consistent with that, and I suppose be advantaged in that sense, but there's a thing specific.
Any further discussion of the A3 amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor of the A3 amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? So the A3 amendment is adopted.
And, Mr. Chair, I think Representative Liebling has an amendment as well.
Which one is that?
Is that the 1446? Representative Liebling offers the 1446 amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. This amendment is was a bill that has not been given a hearing, and I wanted to bring this up here, although it's not directly related to the bill that's before us. I think it's an important issue that needs to be addressed. And this is also moving in the Senate, so it does have a companion, and I believe that it is both moving separately as a bill in the Senate and also is attached to some other legislation as well. I think maybe even to the healthcare reform legislation that's over there. And what this is this has to do with home health care aides who work for agencies that provide care for elderly people in their homes, and this is the kind of care that is, it's not nursing care per se. This is care having to do with help with simple basic tasks that help seniors stay in their homes. There are two parts to the amendment. One part has to do with how often the agency has to send a nurse to supervise the home health care aide, or the home care aide. I don't want to call it health care, it's home care aide. How often the agency has to send a nurse to do that. By law right now, it's every 62 days, and this amendment would move that to every 180 days, or more frequently if indicated by a clinical assessment. Often these people already have some other nursing service that's being provided, and so sometimes this is simply a duplication where they're having to, where the agency's having to send in a nurse just to make sure that everything's going okay with what the home care aide is doing. So really what this does, there's no cost, there would be no cost to the state. This is private pay most of the time, and this simply is an added unnecessary expense for the elderly person who's having this service in their home. So that's the reason for this. The second part of the amendment has to do with adding some tasks to the description of what the home care aide can do. And members, these home care aides are trained with as the home health aide, so they're trained in helping with these tasks. This is for people who are ambulatory, and so as I understand it, when the original legislation was written, it wasn't considered to be necessary to include these tasks. So what this would do is add to the list of things that these home care aides can do to assist with toileting, transfers, and ambulation only if the client is ambulatory and if the client has no serious acute illness or infectious disease. So we're not talking here about providing any kind of nursing services. This is just basically, you know, helping a person get up from a chair, helping them get on and off the toilet. These are people that are pretty able to do this themselves. It just allows a little bit of additional assistance, again, with the goal of helping people to stay in their own homes in the least expensive possible setting. Now, I'm certainly no expert on this, and I do have Barbara Brandt here, who, if the members have questions, she can probably help us to answer those. I don't know if you want to actually take testimony. If maybe the best thing to do would be if members have questions about this amendment.
Representative Powell.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Maybe just a clarification. Representative Levin, this is for the PCA program, I assume? This will impact the personal care attendants?
No, Representative Tellis, as I understand, this is something completely separate from that. But maybe I should ask Barbara Brandt to come down, and if that would be okay with the chair, and get that question answered.
As long as we keep it brief, because we only have 25 minutes left.
My name is Barbara Brandt, and I work for the Minnesota Home Care Association. And our private duty team brought this legislation forward. And the issue is here that we have a Class B home care license that is supposed to be only offering paraprofessional services. So the only services they can offer is what is called a home care aide. They can only provide services to someone who is ambulatory and in a very stable health condition. So what they found is that this licensure isn't really working well for this situation, because there's three things that they can't assist with, even though they're trained to do that as a home health aide, and that is assistance with ambulation, transfer, and toileting. And we do know that one of the biggest risks for an elderly person to have to leave their home is if they fall. And so what we wanted to do is include in the statute the ability for these home care aides to help with those three activities, so they would minimize the likelihood of falls in the home. And then the supervision, I guess that's another question.
Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Lubin, why are we taking rules and putting them in the statute?
Representative Lubin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Anderson, I believe that this is in statute now, but I think I would ask Ms. Brandt to answer that.
Ms. Brandt.
There were some changes to the statute about supervision, and the changes to the tasks are actually in the rules. I don't think... Oh, they moved them to the statute. I didn't realize that's the way they voted over on the Senate side. Yeah, so I missed that.
Mr. Chair, I don't think we're actually putting rules in the statute. We're making a statutory exemption to a rule, which is a different thing. So the rule says one thing, and we're saying you don't have to follow that rule because statute would override the rule.
Representative Abler.
Thank you. I wasn't familiar with this issue, but I think given the testimony, this is a good idea, and I think it gives some flexibility and can keep people in their homes longer, and actually will give us better quality and save us some money, so we should do it.
Representative Bunn.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just real quickly, why was this nursing oversight requirement there at all? I assume it's because they're checking to make sure the person's capabilities haven't deteriorated to the point that they need something other than just an aide, but now they need nursing. I support the movement here, but I'm just trying to get clear why they even had the 62-day requirement before, if you could explain that.
The 62-day requirement is in all the Minnesota home care licensure rules for all the different levels of home care. It was probably originally based upon the requirement for Medicare-certified agencies to supervise every 62 days for unskilled care. And it just got written into the rules or the statutes because of that.
Okay.
Representative Loeffler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And then to the supervision part, I can see where a home health care agency would like to reduce it as well, because it helps them extend their workforce. But having heard too many stories of the worker shortage in these programs and problems with some of the people that are hired, I guess I am concerned about having people work potentially for 6 months before they even have supervision, and that we're really talking about some pretty vulnerable people. You don't pay, whether it's out of public funds or out of your own pocket, for home care unless you really need it, which tends to mean that you're pretty frail. And I see the supervisory responsibilities as sometimes a protection. We've seen a lot of people get ripped off, not only by people whose trust they engender, and it just feels like there's a little bit more eyes on the person. I'd be interested in whether this has been run by or had testimony in the Senate with the Ombudsman for Senior Services or the Department of Human Services or any of the senior advocacy groups, just because it does feel like I would like to just make sure there's enough supervision, and particularly when this is an exception to the rules and it's just kind of coming in out of this process.
Mrs. Brown.
The supervision piece, actually we have maintained close contact with the Department of Health, the licensure division, about this proposed change, and they have said that they would be neutral on the issue. We feel that these individuals, because they are ambulatory and can actively participate in their care, that, and also they usually have very involved families, that, and also they, if you read the whole statute, there is a requirement for an initial supervisory visit within 2 weeks, and then after that it would be at least every 180 days or more often as needed. And the idea that the reason we brought that forward is because families have actually said to us, why do we need your nurse coming this frequently? Everything is fine. If it wasn't, we would call you. And they're feeling like they're using the reserves that their loved one has up faster by these unnecessary visits, and that they would like to see that more flexible. They can come more often if there's a change in health status, but if there is not a change in health status and everything is going well, then they'd like to extend that period of time up to 180 days.
Just to follow up to that, then maybe one way of dealing with it would be that it can be waived by the individual, since you're saying that they are capable of independent decision making, and so that they would be able to waive that frequency if they're a competent individual, and that way it's a client choice.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Representative Murphy, did you have a question?
Thanks, Mr. Chair. Just a really quick one, and I think it's touching on what Representative Loeffler is talking about, but I'm just wondering about the line 1.25 and the clinical assessment being the trigger for an increase in the frequency and how that assessment is conducted.
Ms. Brandt.
If the family or the aide felt that there was some change in their health status, he would communicate with the nurse, and the nurse then working with the family would arrange to go and do an assessment. Either she could do the assessment or they could send the individual to the physician. It would be a decision that they would make. And then based on the change in health status that was identified, they could update the plan of care.
Any further questions on amendment? Representative Eric.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Brandt, is this all private pay, or is there a reimbursement involved here? And if so, does this affect us?
It's all private pay.
Thanks.
Okay. The department says there's no fiscal note, so makes me happy. Representative Leewin.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. I think it was Representative Loeffler here suggested some language, which I think if Ms. Brandt is agreeable, I think I don't see a problem incorporating it, and that would be on line 1.24 after 180 days before the comma to insert the words "if waived by a private pay client."
Well, Mr. Chair, as I'm looking at that, actually, I think that's not quite ready yet.
Mr. Chair, just to be specific about this, if I can, I mean, what these home health, they have about five tasks that they can do. They can help the person, the client, with modified diets. They can give reminders about medication and exercise. They can do household chores. And the reason they have to be licensed to do that is if it's in the presence of sophisticated medical equipment or illness, or household chores where there needs to be inspection protection. So it's dealing with chores, modified diets, and dealing with dress, hygiene, hair care, grooming, and now we're adding toileting and a couple of other things.
And
they have to be ambulatory. So these folks aren't providing health care services to people.
No, they're paid. Yeah. So, Representative Liebling, do you want to make that amendment?
Mr. Chair, I think on reflection here, I think what I would do is leave it as is, but I would definitely be looking at this because I do understand the concern here, and I think that Representative Loeffler's idea is a really good one, but I think we don't have the language just right to do that. So what I would ask the committee to do, I guess, is to vote on the amendment as is, and then I would be looking at this to try to see if it needs some further amendment to clarify it, because I do think that having it be waivable, having the shorter term, but having it be waivable up to 180 days might be the way to go.
Okay. Any further discussion of the 1446 amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor of the 1446 amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? So we have adopted that amendment to the bill.
Mr. Chair, to the bill, we talked about the bill in policy. I think the financial impact with the deletion of sections 1 and 2 is that it's just there's no fiscal impact to the bill.
Representative Ruth.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Tiefen, I asked this question in policy, and I just wanted to revisit it really quickly on page 3, line 3.22, that regarding the state waivers. And I guess my question is, it seems like we're giving, I don't know if this is something that's done on a routine basis, if this is in other, statutes that we're kind of allowing the commissioner to just waive applicable state laws and rules, and will there be some feedback that we'll get the feedback regarding that? So if there is a law that is continually that needs to be waived, that we can then, as a body, revisit that?
Mr. Chair, I don't know if we do that very commonly. I mean, I think the idea here is to allow people to, there's a couple of things. Well, it's to allow more flexibility in how these things are structured, and to the extent these grant programs have rules about how you can use the money specifically, and we want to allow that to change. Well, the Commissioner of Health has to approve that, and then there is a reporting requirement. That's a very important part of this bill. If you look in the last subdivision, there'll be a report evaluation and report back, and I think as part of that we can look at that issue, including legislative changes on line 5-7, legislative changes necessary to improve the effectiveness and to expand the project to the purposes. So perhaps, yeah, no, that's a good question.
Any other? Representative Gottwald. Any other questions? Representative Tiefen renews his motion that House File 3955, as amended, be recommended to pass and return to the Finance Committee. All those in favor, signify. Oh, Representative Gottwald.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm sure this is going to pass, but I do want to say in committee, I really appreciate this approach. I think it's very, very much needed. We need to take these kinds of approaches to health care reform in rural areas. So thank you, Representative Tiefen.
Okay, any further discussion? Then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? So we have passed that bill. And the last bill today is House File 3636, Representative Hosh. And you want to make the motion to lay it over for...
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move that House File 3636 be laid over for possible inclusion on this bill. Mr. Chair, this bill essentially deals with some of the rebasing that we did last year. Last year, especially during conference committee time, we were kind of scrambling and instituted a rebasing scheme in which rebased nursing facility rates over 8 years. Under further and closer review, after that legislation was passed, it came to the realization that some homes would have a 0% increase in the out years, in particular 2009 and 2010. This bill still phases in rebasing using the most current cost structures, but also make sure that there's a floor for nursing homes, that at minimum, a nursing home would get a 1% increase in their rate. And then by using that floor, the commissioner would establish a maximum with the available amount of money and have a maximum rate in which the nursing homes could receive. So this still institutes rebasing and then still has kind of a hold harmless type of provision to make sure that homes wouldn't be given a 0% increase. With that said, and due to the lack of time, I have an A2 amendment that I would like to move. This just clarifies some hold a home harmless provision using a 2009 base. So for that home hold harmless rate.
So Representative Haas moves the A2 amendment. Any discussion of that amendment? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? So we've adopted the amendment. And any further discussion?
There's more amendments.
Okay. Where's the other? There's a 1445 amendment?
No.
Yeah. Representative Gottwald.
No.
Representative Gottwald.
Is this on the amendment? I have comments on the bill.
This would be the amendment. Representative Liebling.
The 1445 is mine.
Okay. So Representative Liebling offers the 1445 amendment.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, this is obvious, pretty much clear on its face what it is, a rate increase for facilities in Olmsted County. And, you know, obviously we're in a very difficult budget situation this year. But again, I think that, I think that's a really important issue that deserves to be heard this year. And certainly we've heard other bills that cost money, and whether we ultimately decide to include them or not, certainly I and everybody will understand if they don't get included in our final budget. But that said, I think it's really important to bring this issue to your attention. And, you know, again, I would much prefer to be doing this in the context of a full hearing on my bill, because then I would have testifiers here who could explain this a whole lot better than I can, because, you know, it is very complicated, and I did bring this up in the last session as well, and I know that other members also have nursing home rate increases, and this is a big general issue that we all have. But I've asked for some materials to be distributed here that I received from some nursing facilities in Olmsted County. I just want to bring this to your attention, and, you know, it's pretty complicated stuff, and I can't say that I understand it or have even had the time really to go through this in great detail, but I especially want to just direct your attention to there's a three-page PowerPoint, or actually it's two pages with printing on both sides of each page, but on the very back, I think that it's kind of telling the data that's set out here. And what I want to let you know is that Olmsted County, because of its unique situation with the Mayo Clinic being there, that we're asking to be increased to the metro reimbursement rate. But I want you to understand that costs for labor in Olmsted County are actually higher than the metro rate because of the Mayo Clinic being there, and that's who the competition is for skilled care. And so all of the problems that we see in our nursing homes across the state because of that we're not raising our wages fast enough and so on, those are even exaggerated in Olmsted County. And that's kind of the point of what I've distributed here. So that said, I talked to Representative Hosh about the fact that I was going to bring this amendment. And, of course, I told him that I would just talk about it and then withdraw the amendment, but we're going to lay this bill over for possible inclusion. So I guess that, since we're doing that, all the bills that we're holding over, as I understand this process, the bills are held over for possible inclusion. Lots of them, if they have fiscal notes in particular, are going to end up not being included. So I guess that I would like to, notwithstanding what I said to Representative Hosh about this, I guess I would not want to withdraw it. I would like it to go on. If members would indulge me, of course, you can feel, you know, if you feel you need to vote no, you'll do what you need to do. But I think it's really important that we, that this gets considered along with other, you know, as we've considered other bills, even to raise nursing home rates, which we know we all want to do, and then we'll have to sift it out and decide what we're actually able to afford to do, even if that turns out to be nothing. So with that, members, I would ask for your support on the amendment.
Representative Gottlob.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. I wasn't sure whether we were going to be removing this amendment or not, but since it's staying in, the obvious response is thank you, Representative Liebling, for advocating on behalf of your nursing homes, but I think we need to do this fairly across the state. We have a lot of nursing homes. If I had time and thought we were going to do things this way, I could probably come up with several nursing homes in Stearns County or in my backyard that have similar problems, could probably come here and testify about, well, but have other factors impacting them. So I respect what Representative Liebling is doing. I still think we need to do this on a fair and equitable basis statewide. And rebasing is critical. We need to get to it.
Representative Abler.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. I think just as a courtesy to the author, if this bill were heard separately, it would have been held over for possible inclusion. This merely puts it into the pot of voting yes doesn't mean you're voting to do it. It means you're voting to stick it on the bill. And the chair will look at all elements of this bill and pick and choose, in the process. So a yes vote is, I think, a good courtesy we should afford the author.
Representative Broad.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I absolutely strongly support Representative Liebling's efforts and hope to have her support on the next amendment. Thank you.
You better vote. Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Of course, you know, I'd like to support it, but I didn't bring my amendment from Mille Lacs, Wright, and Rice. So I guess Representative Fritz were out of it this afternoon. Anyway, my question is to the author. Then does Representative Liebling's change in the Ruggs rate to the geographic 3 mean more money comes out of the rebasing from our bill?
Representative Hodge.
Mr. Chair, Representative Erickson, the bill as it is before you has no fiscal impact. It uses the current appropriation. Representative Liebling would add a fiscal cost, but I do not believe it would compete with the existing appropriation that we have. That is my interpretation.
Representative Dean.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The speaker told me to come down and tell you it's 5 o'clock.
Well, let me comment on this bill. I have three bills that I introduced to take care of nursing home rates in the city of Duluth, and I could not convince the finance chair to give them a hearing. So I urge you to vote no on this amendment. Representative Liebling.
Well, Mr. Chair, with all due respect, this committee spent a lot of time on the chair's bills this session.
Representative Hoss, did you have a comment?
Mr. Chair, I appreciate Representative Liebling's advocacy for her district, but today this bill didn't have a fiscal cost associated with it. I'd like to maintain it that way. And we all have our local stories of some inequities. I have Meeker County also very close to me that I would offer an amendment for it too. But due to the lack of time and also trying to keep this cost neutral, I would appreciate if the committee were to oppose it.
Okay, any further discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor of the Liebling Amendment, which is 1445, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
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 The amendment is not adopted.
No.
The A1 amendment, Representative Broad.
Mr. Chairman, I'll move the A1 amendment.
So Representative Broad, move the A1 amendment, and when you describe your amendment.
Mr. Chairman, I don't think we need to rehash the discussion too much, other than to say this essentially provides a rate increase for a facility located in Le Sueur, and we have a situation in our area where this facility specifically is paid rates that are well below those in the surrounding area. So it's not an attempt to change the entire area even. It's essentially just to get one facility up to par. This is a wonderful, wonderful facility. I have passed out some information related to it. The average rate in the surrounding area of the seven homes within 20 miles is $155. This is at $133. And, Mr. Chairman, it's providing 80 beds for the local area and the surrounding area. It has a wonderful standard. It ranks very highly on quality rankings for the state. And I would just appreciate, let's keep this home open and let's give this one some special attention.
Representative
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. I think the speaker's at the door out there. Any further discussion of this amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
The amendment is not adopted. Representative Posh, we're on your bill.
I think all that has been said, Mr. Chair.
So Representative Posh renews his motion that House File 3636 be laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? So this bill is laid over, and we have minutes. Representative Thiessen has moved the minutes. He's checked to see if his name is correctly spelled, and that would be the minutes for the March 18th. That's all. Just one there. Yep. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? So we have adopted the minutes, and the meeting is adjourned. Thank you.